my first guest today. He's a Connecticut native and Stanford High School graduate. Ken Dixon graduated with a journalism degree from Ohio University, where he was also most valuable player on its soccer team. He reported on suburban communities in Bridgeport City Hall, and then in 1994 began covering the state capitol and state government. He's won awards from the National Society of Professional Journalists and the National Press Club, several awards from the National Society of Newspaper Columnists, and numerous awards for news and column writing from the state chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists. He still plays soccer, and he's a member of a rock and roll band called The Bad Slugs. I love that name, Ken. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me on, Joe.
I am a longtime fan. When I reached out to get you on the show, I was a little nervous to ask, and I appreciate you and your willingness to come on.
Well, let's see how it goes, and then we'll see how you feel later.
I love it. All right. Well, so, Ken, back in October, obviously, everybody in the state was shocked at the senseless murder of our Bristol police officers, Damonte and Hamzy. A national database, though, showed Connecticut police officers were actually involved in the fewest number of fatal shootings compared to officers in other states this year. So that's really good news, obviously.
Yeah, well, I mean, that third cop in had to, unfortunately, took out the shooter.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the one fatal, and the other fatal was a few days after a tasing incident. I think it was in September.
Yeah, there was also, I remember there was some incident in Newington involving a police officer. There was also that same week, I think earlier in that week, that Monday, there was somebody shot at a New Haven cop and hit his vehicle. But again, for the most part, we're definitely in a lower crime bracket, because I guess my bigger point, Ken, is, you know, Bob Stefanowski and the Republicans were really trying to push the idea of Connecticut as kind of a lawless place. Crime was super high and out of control. And you know, reading your most recent article, it doesn't appear to be the case at all.
Yeah, it was a national Republican talking point. They polled well with it, but I think when push came to shove, people were going to just stick with Ned Lamont anyway on Election Day and give him another term.
What did you think of his first term, by the way, as far as his handling of COVID, the way the economy, you know? Obviously, the inflation is going to affect things greatly all over the place. But for the most part, looking at Connecticut's books, they're pretty good.
Well, you know, yeah, I guess so. In 2019, you know, it's the first year. You're just trying to figure out where the rooms are in the Capitol. And then, you know, in February of 2020, the coronavirus raised this ugly head, and then that was it for 2 years, and looks like it's coming back now again. He's well-meaning, but you know, both those guys are millionaires. I don't know how close they are to normal, quote, normal people.
Right. Well, I find it interesting, you know, he's throwing this big shindig on the 4th and accepting a lot of money from lobbyists and outside groups. And, you know, I was saying yesterday on air, I feel like that's a little tone deaf given, you know, again, Connecticut's books are looking pretty solid. We're paying down the pensions, so there's a lot to feel good about. There's a lot of money in the rainy day fund. Gas just dipped under $3 a gallon. Those are all good things, but you still go to the grocery store and the prices are still out of whack. And, you know, talking to a lot of seniors and stuff, I know people are very concerned about home heating oil. Again, to throw yourself like a party upwards of $1 million when, you know, not for nothing, but Ned and Annie did pretty well during the pandemic. They probably could, you know, not have lobbyists kicking money in for this thing and throw themselves a big party if they want to. I just felt that it struck me as a little bit tone deaf. Again, for a guy with a lot of money, maybe that stuff doesn't occur to him.
Well, historically, the inaugurations are taken care of by overpriced rank and file tickets. I think it's $200 if you wanted to go, or if I wanted to go. We have public financing, so lobbyists unlike most states, our lobbyists aren't allowed to, you know, throw in more than $100 like everybody else to a candidate. There's a foundation that runs the governor's residence. I'm imagining that there's an, I haven't reported this, but it's probably a nonprofit that's emerged to do this inaugural. I mean, you know, another $1 million certainly after what Ned spent to get reelected to a job that he doesn't get a paycheck for would be a drop in the bucket. But on the other hand, there was a precedent of outside money floating these inaugurals.
Yeah, it doesn't sit well with me, especially because I don't think that, you know, he doesn't need that. I think there's still a lot of people in this state who are, you know, mistrusting of our political leaders. I think most people who are of the Republican persuasion in this state, you know, feel like the Democrats have it all on lockdown. I've heard, you know, Ned Lamont, who, I mean, he's not your classic liberal. And that seems to be the way, unfortunately, a lot of Republicans in this state look at him as like, you know, this far left. And he's not, you know, it's funny.
I'll say.
Right. I mean, he's
from West Greenwich.
Right.
He doesn't want to raise taxes. I mean, I'm kind of hoping for some push and pull between the liberals in the House and Senate and the governor over, you know, raising taxes on the wealthiest this year. That'd be an interesting battle to cover.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I remember reading when he first took office, he could have like raised, I think it was, he could have raised the top tax bracket by 0.05, and the entire discussion about tolls would have been completely useless. It's like you would have had all the money you needed. And I remember he wouldn't even give that the time of day. And I thought, well, of course not. He's going to go to the country club and tell his buddies that he's raising their taxes. Why would he do that?
Yeah, I don't think he's at the country club anymore, but I like your allusion. he was selling the truck tolls, you know, the highway use tax, as getting out-of-staters. Originally, the tolls would, you know, 40% of the traffic's from out-of-staters, so get that money from them. The highway use tax thing is going to start in January to generate $90 million. It's supposedly directed at interstate trucks, although I think Connecticut trucks and milk trucks and construction equipment might also be getting whacked with that too. So that's going to be increasing prices farther down that supply chain too.
Oh boy. On the line with Ken Dixon from the Connecticut Post. And Ken, the Connecticut Child tax rebate program bought $84.5 million to families in this state. There's talk about providing that again. There's also talk of a middle class or working class tax cut. How likely are both or either of these things to becoming reality?
I know for sure they want to do something for people with kids. And as long as we're enjoying the influx of population that came over from New York and started creating our surplus, I expect, you know, the Democrats are usually pretty good about social spending and spending money in general, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. According to your article, 240,000 families and 353,000 children benefited from this program. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it could be a little more. There were some application problems, but you can't deny it. But on the other hand, it's not a whole lot of money either. I mean, if you're living in poverty, it means a lot. But we'll see what they want to do in Hartford, January 4th. You know, after the inaugural, after the hangover of the inaugural ball, Wednesday night.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do here. Now, a permanent program would benefit 57% of black households in Connecticut and 63% of Hispanic households with incomes less than the low income threshold. So, again, right? I mean, if the Democrats want to put their money where their mouth is, I think now's the time for them to pony up and make it happen.
Yeah, especially since they're still seeing, I hate to use the word robust, but large surpluses. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that we were dealing with one deficit after another.
Yeah, it's been rather impressive. Again, I'm not a Ned Lamont fan, but I appreciate what the guy did, because coming into office, I had very low expectations, really, of both him and of Bob. You know, neither guy really seemed like he knew what he was doing. And I was very concerned about either guy getting in office and, you know, this idea that, well, businessman, we know how to turn things around. He really has done a nice job, and I wonder how much of this is just sort of moving money around. You know, obviously, you talked about the money that came in when we had this influx of people from New York. We've also got quite a bit of money from the federal government. You know, and I saw...
Oh, yeah, that ARPA money.
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, it's... But, right, it's also a matter of, like, you can get money. One of the things I spent a lot of time on recently was, you know, some $42 million went into the New Haven school system, and the test scores are in the teens for third grade reading level and for math, and... those students have a 60% chance of death or jail if they're not at the third grade level. And it was something like 12% and 17% for reading and math, respectively. And it's like, we're throwing money at these problems, but if you're not targeting the money to the right places and the right people, you're just wasting money.
Yeah, one of the highlights, I think, if you want to talk about achievements Lamont made with the ARPA money, was to throw it into early childhood and preschool and daycare, so single parents could go to work, not worry about their kids all day, and presumably the kids have started on some kind of path. A three-year-old might be in first grade now, that could be on track to get grade level, but that's where the rubber meets the road in this state. It's like the big cities, underperforming schools, and then you get the high school to prison pipeline. And one of those stories I worked on last week was talking about how it was a 40% decrease in the prison population in the last 10 years. So that's a positive sign, I think. But you invest in parents with kids, invest in schools. A little known success of Lamont and the legislature was the 2017 budget forced surpluses over X amount of money, exceeding the emergency reserves of $3 billion plus, get put into teacher pensions. And we had a nationally ranked, low-ranked the state employee and teacher retirement program. And the amount of money they put in the last 2 years will save, I forget how many hundreds of millions over the next 30 years in taxpayer money that
right.
would have it's easy, not very easy for me to explain, but there you go.
Right, but we're in good shape. I think that's the main thing. And again, I don't know how this guy was able to do it, but you know, again, to look at the books and be like, wow, like Connecticut is doing all right. I think it's on its way. And I just saw last week, we are now bringing more money in than we're taking out. So just all in all, a pretty solid economic future for Connecticut, at least over the next couple of years. So we'll see how it all plays out.
Yeah, unless invest some in, you know, highways and mass transit. You know, there's enough of a wish list. I mean, there'll be 5,000 proposed laws up in the Capitol come, you know, mid-January.
Yeah, for sure. Ken Dixon, Connecticut Post, I really appreciate your time and your insight. State Senate Majority Leader, Mr. Bob Duff. Bob, welcome back to WICC. How you been?
Good, thank you. How are you?
You know, doing all right.
Digging into some Christmas cookies right now.
Oh, hey, Christmas cookies. That's where it's at, I'll tell you that. It seems, Bob, every time you and I speak, and we you and I speak, I think, pretty frequently, the news in Connecticut keeps getting better.
Yep.
Last time we talked, we found out that our revenues were outpacing our deficits, and now we are seeing even more impressive numbers, more surplus for the end of this fiscal year. I guess I can, you know, and again, we talked about this before the election, but people really seem to put their faith in there. They said their top concern was the economy. And if that were true and that held up to be true, they definitely felt like the Democrats were in better position to get Connecticut straight. And things are looking pretty great.
Well, absolutely. And as I keep saying, you know, the Democrats are the true fiscal conservatives. The Republicans are all about borrowing and spending. We have reduced spending. We have reduced our size of our workforce. We have reduced our debt. We have eliminated our deficits. We have surpluses. We have provided tax cuts to middle income and working families and senior citizens. And we have continued to have the conservative fiscal policy with our volatility cap by putting extra funding with incomes over $3 million into a certain its own pot that's paying down debts. So, yeah, we're working hard to make sure that we have the rainy day fund that's filled up, we pay down those debts, and we have an economy that works for all.
So, again, I think this might be the best financial situation Connecticut maybe has ever been in ever.
I would agree. Yeah.
You know, it's been quite an amazing turnaround. I hear talk about a middle class and or working class tax cut. How serious is that? Is that something that the legislature will be looking to do come January 4th?
Well, I've heard that coming from the governor's office. We're going to see what he's going to propose during his budget address in February. I'm assuming there'll be some ideas centered around that from legislators as well. What is important to me is to make sure that we continue with our good, solid fiscal practices, meaning that we're still paying down our pension debt that's been hanging around our neck for the last 70 years. We're continuing to use technology as our friend when it comes to state agencies. We are making the right kind of reforms so that Connecticut is strong long term. We're growing jobs. We're attracting businesses. Those are the things I want to make sure we continue to do.
Now, the Connecticut child tax rebate brought about $84.5 million to families. I think I saw something like 240,000 families benefited, 353,000 children in low-income areas.
Yeah.
And there's talk about instituting that tax rebate again. What are you hearing on that?
Yeah, I think all those things are on the table again, for sure. It was pretty popular. People actually got a check, which is good. They didn't have to fill out a form on their taxes and then get deducted, and, you know, where it's kind of like not real money at that point. So people actually got mailed checks. So I think that, you know, all those kinds of things are on the table for folks. And again, as I remind your listeners, you know, we last budget that we did back in May, we had $600 million of tax cuts that was included in it, including the gas tax cut, the free bus fares, increased tax credits for senior citizens on their property taxes. So all those things, you know, make a big difference, and that we want to make sure we continue to do that. And don't forget, we also eliminated Social Security taxes years ago for folks, for most folks anyway, and eliminated pension annuity income tax for most folks, and teachers' retirement is 50% income tax free, and anybody who has a veteran pension is tax-free as well.
Bob Duff, State Senate Majority Leader. Bob, I was just talking to Ken Dixon from the Connecticut Post, who did a deep dive on the crime numbers in Connecticut. And you'll recall you and I were talking before the election. Bob Stefanowski tried to sell Connecticut as the Wild Wild West. It was all this rampant crime. It appears, though, that since 2017, violent crime has been halved in Connecticut. Property crime is down 30%. We are on a 10-year decline. Connecticut is so under the national average on crime. This is, in effect, an extremely safe state.
Right, exactly. And that's exactly what you and I have been talking about for such a long time. I'm so glad that Ken Dixon wrote that story, because so many other reporters around the state were writing about crime during the election. And then when crime, the stats came out, they were like, wow, this is interesting. And well, I don't know why people think crime is so high. I'm like, well, because every time, one thing happened, which is one too many, but something happened, it's a clickbait. And so, but what we do know is that Connecticut is an extremely safe state. We're the fourth safest state in the nation. Violent crime has gone down over 10 years. Property crime has gone down. We're seeing, there's a spike internationally of homicides and other violent crimes during the pandemic. That's coming back down, thankfully. I will say this, that, the reports that come out, these are for people who call the police. So if you call the police right now and said there's a robbery next door, that gets booked, whether there's a robbery or not. And all that gets caught into the stats. So there's nobody cooking the books on these things. Because this is all, unless you don't believe your own police department, there's no way to skew the numbers for good or for bad. The numbers are the numbers. And just like, prisoner numbers in state prisons or federal prisons, those are the numbers. But we've spent a lot of time over the last 10 years or so with criminal justice reforms, some of it bipartisan, some of it led by Democrats only, that what we've done is we've put folks who are violent offenders in prison for a longer time, and we've taken people who are nonviolent, generally those who have drug addictions or other types of addictions, and put them in rehab programs and other types of programs that are cheaper and have far better success rates. And they don't have that merry-go-round of recidivism or generational recidivism, and to get people the help they need. So it's been a better result, saving taxpayer money and allowing people to basically live a life, get a job, be productive members of society, and pay their taxes.
We're talking to State Senate Majority Leader Bob Duff. Bob, state troopers ratified a new contract that comes with big raise, makes them the highest paid police in the state of Connecticut. And part of that, I guess, is to sort of help with recruitment. We have 800 strong in the state police. I think we want to get that number up, maybe another 100 or 200, something like that. This goes a long way, I think, towards letting the police know how valued they are in Connecticut. We've seen nationwide, obviously, they're having trouble getting more police. What did you think of the contract? And do you see part of this being recruitment and maybe even finding higher quality candidates with better pay?
Yeah, well, the contract hasn't been delivered to the legislature yet, so I haven't looked at it. And so I don't really have too much of an opinion outside of what I've heard in the news media on it. But, I will say that our state troopers do work hard. We've had many years where the numbers have gone down because of retirements and, people just getting to that age. It's 20. It used to be 20 years and done. Now it's 25 years and done. So it was, one of those things where, people would just retire and they're still pretty young. They can move on to other careers. So I think, we funded new trooper classes over the time. I think that certainly higher pay helps. This is, if you're going to be a police officer, Connecticut's a great place to be a police officer because of the fact that police officers are much better trained and they're relatively safe compared to other states. There's other states that are, quote unquote, the police, where they've done police protection bills, and those places are much more dangerous for cops. Because people tend to shoot them or act violently towards them, even though police have more protections, theory than they might in some other states. But so this is a place where you're trained, you're paid, and you have the backing of your state government because we have worked to make sure that they have what they need to be able to do their job.
State Senate Majority Leader Bob Duff. And Bob, before the election, things were looking a little dicey. The price of gas was up and the price of groceries was up and inflation was high. And those things have all started to level out a little bit. Gas is now under $3 a gallon here in the state of Connecticut, which is exciting news. Groceries are still a little out of whack. I wonder, in the next session, is there anything you guys can do in the legislature to work on getting in Connecticut's inflation down at all?
Well, you know, we try to do everything we can from our angle. As you know, we don't tax groceries. Other states do tax groceries. But I think that the grocery and the food issue really is a federal problem, because what's ended up happening is I don't know of any farmer right now that's making a lot of extra money farming their fields or their crops. What you have now is an oligopoly of a few food companies, just like you have a few energy companies that control the market. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, they know that inflation has gone up. And so not only are they charging more because of inflation, but they're charging more because they can. And they just put a price increase on top of the inflationary increase because they assume people aren't going to notice it. So, you know, I think it's really an issue that our federal government needs to be addressing. I think President Biden and others have been working on that issue as well here in Connecticut. For us, I think that's why we've been bullish about passing tax cuts to put more money in people's pockets, because same reason we did the free bus service, same reason we did the gas tax cut, is because it provides a little bit of relief in an area that people need it. So, you know, we're open to ideas. We're open to figuring out what we need to do to make sure that people continue to get fed. And don't forget, we also passed in special session funding for additional funding for Operation Fuel, additional funding for a low-income heating assistance program that would help our constituents.
Yeah, I hope people understand, right? I mean, there are places that they can go and apply for assistance and probably maybe where they didn't qualify before, probably will now. So
yeah,
definitely...
I will say this, that, you know, we had oil delivery to our house probably about a month ago, and it was over $6 a gallon for oil. We just had another one that was more recently $4.59. And so that, you know, hopefully prices continue to go in that direction. $4.59 is still a lot of money.
Right.
$6.09 was hemorrhaging. You know, my hope and my prayer is that, you know, because of the international marketplace, that those oil prices continue to go down and it stabilizes a little bit better.
Bob,
it's just hard.
Yeah, it definitely is. Last thing I want to ask you about, you know, again, you and I are both real estate guys. There is a serious housing shortage here in the state of Connecticut. We're still at about half the inventory level we were pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. It's, I think, one of the top issues that we are facing in this state. What can we do about the housing situation in Connecticut?
Well, there's a few things. One is we've got to build more housing. I mean, it's just, you know, we've got towns around us that just don't want to do anything. And that's just bad policy. It's bad for the state. It's bad for long-term growth. It's bad for attracting jobs. Bad for keeping young people in the state. We've got to build housing. It can't just be a solution anchored by Bridgeport, Stamford, Norwalk, and other cities across the state of Connecticut. It has to be a solution really borne by every community in the state. So that's one. Two is rehabbing some of the housing that we have already, and not letting that just get decrepit and old, and only the only thing that can happen is it get knocked down. The only option would be knocking it down. So
right.
You want to maintain what you have. And three is to just continue to, you know, work to make things more efficient. I mean, for example, we have people who do qualify for the rental assistance program, which is the state's version of Section 8. We have Section 8, others, and it is so inefficient, so clunky that it a lot of people don't use it because it doesn't work, and that's a lifesaver for many folks and families.
Very true. Bob, always appreciate your time. Always appreciate your willingness to come on and talk about all of these things, some good, some bad. I really do appreciate it. Want to wish you happy holidays and a happy new year. I look forward to talking to you after the new session begins January 4th.
All right, you as well. Thank you, Joe, and happy holidays to you. Happy new year to all of your listeners, and thanks for always having me on.
My pleasure. Bob Duff, State Senate Majority Leader.